Hare Krishna. So, very nice to be here and see so many devotees here, my friends from over the years. This morning, Sruti Dharma asked me to talk about Srila Prabhupada at Bhaktivedanta Manor. So, we'll try to do that this morning. Today, for me, April 22nd, it was another anniversary for me today. This was in 1971. It was 40 years ago. Today was the first day I chanted Hare Krishna. And that was where I was from, Philadelphia. Today is Earth Day. I guess it's still Earth Day. I don't know. Back then it was Earth Day. It was the second annual Earth Day. And I went with a friend of mine. At the time, his name was Ken Wolf. And we went to a festival in a park. It was an Earth Day festival. It was just the local bands were playing and things. So there I met the Hare Krishnas. And at that time in Philadelphia, temple president was Nayana Baram. Most of you probably won't know him. And his wife, some of you will know well, his wife is Divi Shakti. So she was in Philadelphia at that time. One of my gurus, Divi Shakti in Vrindavan. So and that was it. The next day, we went to the temple, my friend and I, Ken, every day for a week. And then we shaved up, which that's what you did back then. It was a very quick process from meeting devotees to shaving your head and moving into the temple. So it was just 7 days later, we both moved into the temple. And back then, Kirtanananda Swami, he came and took us off to New Vrindavan. And then I found out my friend, who never said a word to me, we were going to LaSalle College together. And after we moved into the temple, he told me that he had known the devotees, you know, and he had met Prabhupada in Los Angeles some months before, but he never mentioned a word. So when we were at this festival that day, he dragged me down to meet the devotees, and I didn't want to go because I thought they were from Mars. And at the time, my consciousness was not a little fuzzy, so they looked very frightening to me. I didn't know where they were from, but he convinced me to go down. So, and that was it. I just asked him a few questions, and Hare Krishnas have all the answers. So they answered all my questions, and so that was April 1971, and then 16 months later, I became Prabhupada's servant in New Vrindavan, so it was all happening very quickly in those days. And then that was September of 1972, so it was just about 1 year later when I was with Srila Prabhupada at that time for almost 1 year, and he came here to Bhaktivedanta Manor, which is very, very similar to when it was back in 1973. of course, there's some changes, but everything's very much the same. And those who have looked at my book, I had some of the pictures were here from the manor, and there was one which, to me, I really wanted to put in the book because it kind of was one of the feelings I had being here in the manor at that time. And it was Prabhupada coming down these stairs right there, and he was about on the fifth stair. And it's an interesting picture because, like it was, Prabhupada, he would go on his morning walk early in the morning, which, depending on the month of the year, early on the morning here, some of his morning walks were almost in the dark because it would get light here later. And you'll see that on the walks, foggy mornings, sometimes misty and in the fields. Sometimes it's actually almost dark, but because of the time, Prabhupada would go on his walk. But that particular morning, someone snapped a picture as he was coming down, but the whole picture is very interesting because all you see is Srila Prabhupada, and his foot's up in the air, which many of Prabhupada's pictures you see like that, where you don't see his feet kind of touching the ground, and his one foot is clearly he's taking a step. But it's just Prabhupada in his dhoti kurta, and not even a garland on. It's a very stark-looking picture. Jai Shri Shivara Gokulananda. But to me, the manor at that time was kind of like that. It was a very, it was such a big place, and there were, you know, maybe a dozen to 20 devotees here in the beginning that were doing everything. So it was very kind of a quiet, just this big place. And of course, sometimes it was a little chilly in here in the morning and through the day. It was a little dark. And so that picture kind of showed that to me. That's but the manor has always been very wonderful. And when Prabhupada came, just like the book, Ranchur Prabhu did, When the Sun Shines, while Prabhupada was here, it was a course of almost 6 weeks, which he took, went to Paris for 1 week to install the deities as well. But he was here for over a month, and the weather was very, very nice. I didn't know anything about England at that time when I came here, and it was just very beautiful, summer-like weather much of the time. And you see there were so many pictures of Srila Prabhupada here at the manor on morning walks and sitting in his garden in front of his rooms, where he would spend many afternoons there. So, so many things happened. And of course, Shyamasundara Prabhu, he was always arranging to bring guests. Shyamasundara had this idea that as long as he was bringing people, famous people, important people, politicians, race car drivers, singers, whoever he could get to come, that was someone that was well known, he would get them to come and see Prabhupada. And in that way, he thought, Prabhupada will stay here. You know, Shyamasundara, he was, you know, very clever, and he had been Prabhupada's servant. So he always knew how much Prabhupada liked to preach, and especially if he could preach to people that could do something, you know. So every evening he would be bringing different people, would come for darshan, and the devotees would come and sit. At that time at the manor as well, it was very very liberal policies. When Srila Prabhupada was in the West, to go on a morning walk was a major achievement. You know, if you had to be, you know, if you were one of the lucky people to be in one of two different cars, you would be on the morning walk. If you were sannyasi, temple president, big book distributor, otherwise there was no chance. But here at the manor as well, you would see the morning walk. Of course, Prabhupada would just walk down the stairs and just walk out the door, and everyone would be with him on the morning walk. You were on the morning walk sometimes? Yes. Yeah, you'll see so many devotees. They would be on the morning walk. So it was very wonderful. Prabhupada gave a lot of association to all of us at that time. And at these darshans, I remember different people, of course, coming to his darshans here. And we were talking yesterday, Graham Nash, he was one of the people that had come to see Prabhupada. He was very famous here, huh? Graham Nash. Some of you know he was a big race car driver and won, I guess it was Le Mans. Or anyway, so he was very famous. And he was one of the guests one day. And Amekala, she would tell me so many times, she would talk about Prabhupada when Graham Nash was here, because she said she was in the bathroom. She had a tendency not to be in the room where Prabhupada was, but she used to go on the other side of the door and sit in the bathroom. And she was so fascinated because she saw that Prabhupada just talked with Graham Nash, and he's talked about engines. And he talked about him about the car engines and how they worked and all these things. And he went on for, you know, 15, 20 minutes just discussing that with Graham Nash. So she was amazed, you know, and she thought, you know, my spiritual master, he just knows everything. He knows everything about everything, you know. And Prabhupada was, he could sit with anyone and make them very comfortable, very relaxed. And then, of course, preaching would be there. But he would always establish a relationship with everyone. It wasn't just coming and hitting people over the head, you know, with the philosophy. He understood, which is very, very important. And something I always noted with Srila Prabhupada is he would understand. Like he said, when he came to America, he said, I studied, he said, and observed the culture in America. He said, and as he established his preaching, he did it by understanding how to preach to people, not to just come in. It was one size fits all. He dealt with everyone individually. So each evening it was like that. One evening, of course, Ravi Shankar was here with his, I don't know, was his daughter or his sister. But that was also an interesting day because she sang that song. Some of you may have heard it. It's even, you can find it on YouTube now. It's called Krishna, Where Are You? It's a, you can look it up, very interesting. It's, I'm missing you, Krishna, where are you? And she goes on not seeing Krishna. And Prabhupada sat and listened. And I didn't know what to think of it, of course, because it was something outside of anything Prabhupada had done. But after she was done, Prabhupada looked at Ravi and looked at her and he smiled and he said, very nice. He said, this is the mentality. He said, not that we're seeing Krishna, but we're always looking to see Krishna. Where are you? He said, it's that separation. So he approved of it because it wasn't some sahaja type song, but it was missing Krishna, feeling his separation. So Prabhupada said, it was very nice, he said. And then one day, one of his early admirers came, Allen Ginsberg. So he came very early, Allen Ginsberg, I guess 66 and 67, when Prabhupada was in America. He was a very, at that time, very famous beatnik poet in America, Allen Ginsberg. And he appreciated Prabhupada and what he was doing. He was a funny fellow, but... But now it was 1973, and of course, Prabhupada's movement was international, worldwide. He had thousands of disciples, and Allen Ginsberg had come back, and Prabhupada talked with him, and he was carrying a little harmonium, a little travel harmonium. And he was saying he was just in India, and he'd gotten this harmonium. Prabhupada was, like, and the room was filled with devotees. There were 20, 30 devotees in the room. Every evening it was like that. And then Alan said, can I chant? And Prabhupada said, yes. So he got his harmonium and he was playing like the chords, you know, so the harmonium, and it was a drone, you know, and he was playing. And we're all sitting there, you know, everyone's waiting, all his Prabhupada's disciples, and Prabhupada's sitting, and he's going, and then he goes, oh, and then we're like, oh no. So he did a few of those. Each one got a little deeper and a little longer. Oh, and we're sitting, and Prabhupada's sitting. So then he started chanting Hare Krishna. So he led some kirtan and he chanted and we all responded. And that went on for another few minutes. And then somehow Prabhupada managed to get his attention and the devotees. And he said, now Hansaduta can lead. Hansaduta was off to the side of Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was, you could see he was eager to have his disciple chant and lead, which I thought was also very instructive as far as kirtan went. Prabhupada stopped him. He just said, let him lead. So then Hansaduta, who chanted so wonderfully, very melodious and beautiful kirtan, so then he led the kirtan. And then, of course, it became very much more enthusiastic than it had before. So that was Allen Ginsberg Day. And then another evening, one poet came. He's still here. I saw him some years ago when I was here at David's graduation, in college, university graduation. His name was Donovan, and he was a singer and poet, and he was back in 72, 73. He was very, very big all over the world, in the U.S., I think in 1970, 71, I remember his songs. One of his famous songs was Mellow Yellow. So he came one evening, and he had a very young girl with him. And he was sitting there, and Prabhupada was speaking to him. And specifically, you know, when he was speaking to him, the philosophy. And you could see that the girl, she was not comfortable, you know, and she was kind of, and finally she gave Donovan, you know, the little of a poke. And then he said to Prabhupada, you know, Swamiji, he said, I have to get going now. You know, I have things to do. And then he got up and left. And of course, Prabhupada just kind of smiled and shook his head and said, you know, he's too attached, he said. And that was it. That was Donovan night. And at that time, here more than anywhere, even then in that year, there were Indians. They were also coming to the temple, some Indian families. And Prabhupada was speaking with them. And somehow or other that evening, that the conversation, the topic came up, was tea. And Prabhupada was telling them, you cannot drink tea. He said, you know, he said you can, you said you drink Nimbupani. He said, why you have tea? He said, you should not take tea. And they were trying to say, Prabhupada, well, he said, sometimes when you go out, he said, when you see other people, you go to their places, he said, after dinner, they always offer you tea. And he said, no, don't. And Prabhupada was always, he said, no. He said, just tell them, I don't drink tea. If you please make me a Nimbupani. He said, anyone can make Nimbu, a little lemon, a little sugar. He said, finished, you know. And then he laughed. And he said, my wife, he said, she was very attached to drinking tea. He said, and I would always tell her, you know, you have to stop. He said, and she wouldn't stop. He said, so, he said, one day I said, you know, either the tea goes or I go. He said, and here I am. So that was his, it was just a little simplification, but Prabhupada was very, very strict in what he wanted everyone to do. So he was telling them the same thing. And of course, the most fun, most interesting one was when George came, George Harrison. And Prabhupada had so much affection for George, because, you know, we'd always bring him closer, you know, we'd always say, come closer, come closer. And George, he was very, very sweet, very humble, very shy, and short. And very quiet. So Prabhupada would have to coax him, say, come, 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 you know. And then he'd just come up, finally come up next to Prabhupada's seat. Prabhupada would rub his head, you know. It's nice to see you. And George, he'd sit. And then, of course, when he was coming, everyone knew, so they made very wonderful prasadam, you know, for George to have prasadam, samosas and halva and kachuris, to make all these things. And they brought it right into the room. He was sitting just in front of Prabhupada's desk. So they brought him a nice plate of prasadam. So immediately Prabhupada said, take prasadam, you know, take prasadam. So George took a little, you know, he ate a little bit what was there. And then they brought more prasadam. And he's going, no. He said, I just did eat. And he said, I'm not hungry. And Prabhupada said, take prasadam. You know, take. So, yes, Prabhupada, he's saying. And put the prasadam and he's eating, you know. And then, again, it went on, you know, three times. And brought more prasadam. And he's going, no. He's going, no, please. And Prabhupada said, take prasadam. He said, prasadam can never hurt you. Yes, Prabhupada, he said. So then he just continued to eat prasadam. And then Prabhupada said, so how are you doing? You know, and he said, oh, everything's good, Prabhupada. He said, I was chanting 16 rounds, he said, for some time. He said, once I started chanting 16 rounds, he said, I lost all interest in doing anything else. He said, and all interest in, you know, making music, doing my business and everything. He said, I just became disinterested in it. He said, so I stopped chanting 16 rounds so that I would continue. He said, otherwise, he said, I wouldn't, you know, he said, I just had no desire to do it anymore. And Prabhupada just smiled. He said, whatever you can chant. He said, you chant. He said, it's okay. He said, chant as much as you can. He said, that's okay. So then they, George was saying, he said, Prabhupada, I have He said, I have so much to do. He said, I have so much that I want to do. He said, and he said, I get annoyed. He said, when I have to go to sleep. He said, I don't have time. He said, I don't like it. And Prabhupada had this big smile, and he said, me too. He said, I hate sleep. He said, whenever I'm going to sleep, I think, now I'm just going to waste my time. And the two of them, they were having so much, and he's going, yes, and George is saying, yes, that's what I think too. He said, I don't have time. He said, I don't like it. And Prabhupada said, no, he said, it's just a waste of time. He said, whenever I go to sleep, he thinks, now I'm going to waste my time. And just like here, and Prabhupada would say that, and of course, that's how he felt. But then you would go into his bedroom, and Prabhupada would just lie down so peacefully and just take rest. Then a few hours later, he was up and doing his translating work. But it was so nice to see that interchange between them. Of course, and here at the manor, if you go up those stairs, at the top of the stairs, right next to Prabhupada's room, on the left at that corner, there's that little room there. There's a closet. It's kind of long, 6 foot, 2 meter long closet, and maybe 1 meter wide. And Prabhupada was here for, you know, extended time. So that closet became the kitchen, my kitchen, Prabhupada's kitchen. That's where I cooked for Prabhupada, was in this little closet. We had a little burner stove in there, a little gas stove, and a bucket of water, and that's where I prepared Prabhupada's lunch, because then I would be right there, right next to him if he needed anything. And many things happened here, of course, in that time. Can't tell so many things, but during that time, one day Prabhupada called me into his room, and he said, I want you to make one sabji for lunch. He said, I want you to make a wet vegetable. He said, with fried curd. You say fried curd, huh? And the cauliflower and the peas, wet vegetable. So he told me how to do that. And so I made his lunch, and I made that vegetable down in the bottom of the cooker, because that's where you boil the water, and it's the steamer to make the steam. So I made the vegetable in there, and of course made the curd and used the whey for the water in the sabji. And I brought it to him, and he liked it very much. So then the next day during massage, or before massage, he said to me, make that vegetable again today. He said, the fried curd sabji, he said, make it today. So I made it that day. And every day for a week, I would go in, he would say, make that sabji today. So I was so happy, because obviously Prabhupada was enjoying this curd sabji, and he did that every day, he would say, make that today. And I'd say, yes, Prabhupada. So that was always one of the sabjis. Every day it went on like that for a week. And of course, during that time, it was very wonderful, because that was the installation on Janmashtami day of Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda, and that, which most of you, I think, or hope at least, you know about the history of Radha Gokulananda. And Prabhupada had a very wonderful relationship with Krishna and with these deities in particular. It was a very personal relationship. And they were the deities that Prabhupada had sent here after the festival in Bombay, or Delhi, one or the other, Bombay or Delhi. And these deities were at that pandal for 1 week time. And Prabhupada gave class every day in the evening to 10, 15,000 people at these pandals in India. So, and the deities were on one side on the altar, and Prabhupada's Vyasa-san was on the other side. And of course, it was a huge pandal. So that was back in January of 1973. And at the end, the very last day of the festival, after class, it was a Chutananda Swami. He was leading the kirtan. I just saw him last week. He's in Alachua now, Chutananda. And of course, he led very wonderful kirtan. He was like a Bengali. And was very enthusiastic. There was like 20 devotees on the stage, thousands of people who had attended Prabhupada's lectures every day, Bhagavad Sapta. And Prabhupada, it was the one and only day, Prabhupada got off of the Vyasasan while the kirtan was going on. And of course he got off and I followed him, and he went right before Radha Gokulananda. At that time they didn't have that, their name. And he just stood in the center of the stage and he looked at them and he folded his hands and he bowed his head. And then he turned around and bowed again. And then he started walking, like dancing, but walking. And he was going around. He started circumambulating the stage and the altar and the deities. So he did that three times. And each time he would come in front of them and he stopped and he bowed. And then he went around again. So the third time he did that and he stopped before them and he looked and bowed. And then he turned around. But this time when he turned around, he went like this. And he's facing, you know, 15,000 people are out there, and he just raised his hands and starts dancing on the stage. Of course, now you've had, for the last few minutes, all the devotees were following him, chanting and dancing. Prabhupada's, you know, walking, dancing on the stage. Everyone was in ecstasy. So then he raises his arms and he starts jumping up and down on this stage, you know, this rented stage. So everybody, all the devotees are just going into complete ecstasy and jumping up and down and dancing. And Prabhupada's lifted everyone up. And then I looked over, and on the altar, Radha Gokulananda, they're going like this, you know. So they were dancing with Prabhupada too, and they're just rocking back and forth, the deities, and Radharani. So they're both dancing on their altar. And Jamuna and I, she was there. We both went up and we held them down because they were rocking so much, you know. So then kirtan went on and Prabhupada danced a little, then he stopped. But everyone in the crowd, everyone was chanting and dancing. So it was very wonderful. One of those rare moments to be with Prabhupada, to see Prabhupada chanting and dancing in ecstasy. It was so wonderful. So then after it was over, Prabhupada went into the car and in the back seat, and I sat next to him, and the driver was there, and the secretary was in the front. So we were all so excited, and Prabhupada was sitting very quietly, and I just looked, and I said, Prabhupada, I said, that was really wonderful, you know. And Prabhupada knew what I was speaking about, and he said, yes. He said, it was very nice. He said, and I would have kept on dancing. He said, but I saw that the deities, they were also moving. He said, so I stopped. He said, otherwise I would have kept dancing, he said. So that was in January, so it was like 8 months later, Prabhupada's here now, and he had sent these deities right after that festival. There was not even a manor at that time. They didn't even know what they would do with these Radha Krishna deities. And Prabhupada said, don't worry, just get them there. So then the manor manifested, and the deities, and Prabhupada installed them. And of course, there's a video of that, and he did the exact same thing again after Aratik, there on the, you know, in the altar. Prabhupada bows down, and he did the exact same thing he had done 8 months before with these deities. He went around three times, and then when he was finished, he raised his hand, and he's jumping up and down. And now, of course, the temple room's filled with all of his disciples, and he called them to come into the deity room. He called them into the deity room to come and dance. So it was very wonderful, one very wonderful thing. And I had never seen Prabhupada do that before. And he, with these deities, twice he was dancing in front of Radha Gokulananda. So it was very wonderful. So very fortunate here. You have these deities, very special deities here. And then the next day was Vyas Puja, which was also very wonderful. And Prabhupada, he as he would do. I was with him a few times for his Vyas Puja. And he would call his disciples to speak. So different disciples, they would say something. And then Prabhupada gave a lecture, which is also available. Some of you, I'm sure you've heard it. And Prabhupada, in his lecture, he starts glorifying his disciples. And he started out talking about Chaitanya Charitamrita, which was just coming out at that time. It was right here in the on the lawn. You'll see some of those pictures, Prabhupada sitting there, and you see me sitting near him. And some of them, I'm holding this book. Well, that book was called Lord Chaitanya in Five Features. And that was the first volume of Chaitanya Charitamrita, but it wasn't even a hardbound volume. It was just a few of the first chapters, but they were very eager to get the first book out on Chaitanya Charitamrita. So you'll see reading that book. So Prabhupada was very happy Chaitanya Charitamrita was there. And Prajumna was here at that time, his Sanskrit editor. And Prabhupada started glorifying him. And first he said, he's helped me, he said, with Chaitanya Charitamrita. Then said, practically, he said, he has done it, Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said. And he said, and his wife, Arundhati, he said, she's done all the transcription. So Prabhupada was sitting here that day. It was very sweet. It was very personal, very sweet. And he began glorifying his disciples, Prajumna and his wife, who said, did all the translating. And then he said, my Grahastha disciples, he said, they're doing so much service. So Prabhupada turned around the whole day, which was glorifying him, especially on his appearance day, and he began to glorify everyone. Then, of course, he went upstairs, and that's also on video. It's very wonderful because there's like 10 plates of prasadam in front of him, 10 silver plates from all the everything that was prepared. But it was always the same. And the plates, they were all right in front of the windows looking out to the garden. And they were all right on the floor and on the sheets. And Prabhupada was sitting as he always did. He just sat on the floor on a little straw mat or a little cushion that was there. And there's this huge amount of prasadam, and Prabhupada's just looking. You can see him just looking at everything, and he'd take some of this, and he'd take some of that. And he was just picking all the things he wanted, so it was very wonderful. So and then a few hours later, Prabhupada rang his bell, and I went into his room. So it had just been Janmashtami and Vyas Puja, and both those Janmashtami night, I practically fasted. After midnight, 1 a.m, I had a fruit plate. That's all I ate. So when you fast all day, you're not very hungry, usually. And then the next day, Prabhupada's Vyas Puja, because of what I had done the day before. So again, we had a big feast that day, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. But I just didn't feel hungry, and I thought, let me, utilize this and be a little austere and cut down on my eating. And Prabhupada always, you hear his lectures, he's always talking about minimizing the demands of the body, eating and sleeping, to minimize these things. So I minimized. So that afternoon, Srila Prabhupada rang his bell. So I went in, offered obeisances, and I'm sitting right in front of him at his desk. And he looked at me. He said, are you all right? I said, yes, Prabhupada. I said, I'm fine. He said, you feeling okay? I said, yes, Prabhupada. And he looked at me. He said, because you look very thin. He went like this, my face. He said, your face, he said, is very thin. He said, you look like you're ill. And I said, the last few days, we've been fasting. And I said, and then when I ate, I said, I just ate a little bit because I didn't feel hungry. I said, so I just had a little prasadam, I said, last night and just now. And he looked at me He said, how are you going to do your service if you don't eat? He said, you have to massage me every day. He said, you have to be strong. He said, you should eat as much prasadam as you want. He said, whatever you can digest, he said, that's what you should eat. He said, otherwise, how are you going to do service? And I was like, I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, eat as much prasadam as you want. He said, that's what you should eat. I said, yes, Prabhupada. So that was the end of my trying to cut down on prasadam. And I did the same thing. Over a year later, the same thing happened, the same 2 days. He called me in the room. It was in Krishna Balaram Mandir. And of course, I had no memory at all. I went in and he said, are you okay? And I said, yes. And we had the exact same conversation. He said, you don't look well. I said, well, I said, we just fasted for a day. He said, you have to eat. He said, how can you do your service if you don't eat? He said, take prasadam. I said, yes, Prabhupada. But now I'm 59. Now I'm not eating so much either, but not because I'm trying. It's just automatic. Automatic. The digestion has changed, you know. So everything happens in its own course. But it was very wonderful to be here. I like to be here very much back in those days with Prabhupada. He had very, this was like a home, you know. Prabhupada had some temples. There were homes. Los Angeles was a home. Prabhupada could stay there for weeks and weeks in that temple. And Hawaii was another place Prabhupada could sit and stay. It was very comfortable. He was able to do so much translating. It was a quiet, peaceful place. And this place was like that. When Prabhupada was here, it was very comfortable here. We had very wonderful facilities, so many nice devotees. And the atmosphere was always very nice here. And Prabhupada would get lots of translating done. So that was always a nice place to be. And anyone have any questions at all? We can go on. Nothing? Yes. Hare Krishna Bhakta will. Yeah. Yes. Yes. It's fortunately, our good fortune is Prabhupada, he didn't accept offenses. Just like Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. Prabhupada said, if you do something accidentally, he said it, they overlook. Prabhupada, he overlooked so many of our shortcomings. But it was being with him personally, you know, one had to be very careful and maintain a distance and a you know, proper mentality. And especially, you know, I like being his personal servant, you were in his room many times just alone with him. And there were some times where Prabhupada, he would, you know, he would let you know what your position was, you know, that you were servant, you were his menial servant. From the very start, Prabhupada let me know that, you know, what my service was, what my duty was, and that was his servant, you know. But you know, he also would be very, very relaxed. He would talk to you, he would say things, he would do things with you, so one could become, like you say, familiar if you weren't careful. And you know, I know over the course of time, I was with him almost 2.5 years, and you know, it is a problem where you can become less attentive in Krishna, in our Krishna consciousness. That's a problem we all face, you know, whether you're with the spiritual master personally, or you're worshiping the deity, or whatever it is, we just start to take things casually, and that's a dangerous situation. I just read a letter just yesterday. Prabhupada said, he said it's very good in Krishna consciousness to have that a fearful state of not making offenses, to the spiritual master. One has to be, in a way, fearful, cautious. He said cautious. One has to be very cautious not to commit offenses. So, of course, when you're right there with Krishna's pure devotee or spiritual master, you have to pay special care. There was one devotee that was in the party. He was a Sanskrit editor for some time, not Prajumna. And during massage, Prabhupada, very often the secretary would come in. This was his massage before lunch, which was like an hour and a half. So it was a very good time when the secretary would come in, his Sanskrit editor would come in, and they would ask Prabhupada questions, because it was like kind of open. Prabhupada wasn't in his room doing things. You know, he was getting massage. So very often the secretary would read the mail at that time and dictate, Prabhupada would dictate responses. Or the Sanskrit editor, he would come in and ask questions. So at this time, well, this one day, his Sanskrit editor came in. And as we always did, whenever you entered Prabhupada's room, you offered obeisances. Whenever you left, you offered obeisances. That was automatic. See, that's the thing, automatic. Automatic's not a good thing. It always has to be thought. Nothing is automatic. You know, everything requires consciousness. So first time he came in, and I'm behind Prabhupada rubbing his back, you know. Again, trying to think of what you're doing, you know. And he came in and he offered obeisances and he asked Prabhupada a question very quick, and Prabhupada responded about some Sanskrit word, and then he left. And a few minutes went by and he came back in and again he offered obeisances. And this time was a little shorter. Maybe he said a prayer, maybe he didn't, you know, but it was just kind of, he went down and offered obeisances, and he got back up and he asked Prabhupada a question. And Prabhupada gave him an answer and he left. So then, a few minutes later, he comes back in again, and he just bowed down, he popped his head on the ground for a second, and sat up, and he started to speak. And before he could say anything, Prabhupada looked at him. He said, "What is this hatchet?" He went like that, because that's what he did with his body. He went like that, and Prabhupada said, "What is this hatchet?" He called it a hatchet. He said, "You offer your obeisances," he said, "to your spiritual master." He said, "Not this hatchet." So it was a very strong word to use. He called it a hatchet, which, what do you do with? Is all you do with a hatchet is just cut things, you know? So he was saying, like, you're cutting your Krishna consciousness, you know, you're cutting short. He said, don't do this hatchet thing. So that's familiarity. That's what happens. You start to just become casual. There's nothing casual in Krishna consciousness. It requires clarity, requires thought. There was one devotee who wrote Prabhupada a letter about Krishna as a little boy, maybe the butter thief or something like that. And in I don't know what the letter was that went to Prabhupada, but Prabhupada says, "We worship Krishna," he said, "as the supreme personality of Godhead." He said, your relationship with Krishna is not seeing him as a butter thief, little boy. He said, "We worship him as the supreme personality of Godhead." So see, that's the point of familiarity you get even with the deities. You can say, "Oh, here I am, Radha Krishna, nice to see you again." You know, no, that's not our mentality. It's one of awe and reverence to worship the deity. So that always has to be there. That should always be shown. And in that way, then, you know, one doesn't have to be fearful. You do what's, you know, one's cautious. And that way you can protect yourself. So yes. So spiritual master, just like same thing here. Prabhupada's here. Huh? Prabhupada said, Krishna, he said, he's here. He said, he can talk to you. He said, and he will talk to you. He said, and you can talk to the deity. He said, Krishna is so kind, he comes into the form of the deity. He descends into the form. He said, and you can have a conversation with him. He said, but you have to qualify yourself. Not such an easy thing. But when one becomes qualified, Krishna will speak to you. It's like Prabhupada, sometimes he would, you know, he would come. He was always the same way. Even he's talking to Krishna still, you would see during Govinda prayers, he would come at each altar, he would offer his dandavats, everything, always with the greatest respect. It wasn't that you get to this platform, huh? Spontaneous love, and then you let everything go. You have to set the highest example for everyone. It doesn't matter. And that's what Prabhupada did. So that's our example. There's no question of coming a time where you just come in and say, oh, very nice to see you again, you know. It's not like that. So even here in the temple, we have to recognize all the time Prabhupada's here in the Vyasasan. Deities are here. I know when I sometimes over the years when I was here, we would come to festivals. I sometimes would struggle with the Mekkala because she would always try to make that space that Prabhupada can see the deities. And just like this morning, every morning it's the same. Everyone comes up with their backs to Prabhupada. That's offensive. You don't turn your back to the spiritual master. You have to give a space. You have to recognize he's our acharya of ISKCON. You know, he's everyone's guru here. So that consciousness has to be there. And if it's not, it means we're not conscious of what's going on. So every festival would be like that. And she would say, you know, Sruta, you got to do something. And it was like, you know, moving mountains, trying to move people in this temple room here, you know, and I just look at her, and then she'd look at Gauri, and Gauri'd be, oh, here we go, but she was right, you know, that was proper consciousness, you know, you have to recognize, we recognize the spiritual master, we recognize the deity, so that's, all these things are always important, you know, never comes a time it changes. Yes, Maharaj. Yeah, cross is nice. I think even if back, the main thing is at least give Prabhupada the vision to see the deities. You know, that's utmost importance. To stand this way, I guess you can stand sideways, see the deities, see Prabhupada, but at least not just to be just standing in front of him. You know, that's just not a good thing. Not good for you. On one morning walk in Juhu, and Prabhupada, this is when he was in the flat, so he was on the third floor, so he walked down two flights of stairs. He walked out the door, and of course, there would always be 20, 30 devotees waiting to see Prabhupada. So when he came down, made his entrance into the, you know, the garden area there in Juhu, everyone offered their obeisances, naturally, to see Prabhupada. But there was one young boy, he was a young devotee boy, he had just come to the temple, and he just was standing there, hands folded, very respectfully, just looking at Prabhupada. And Prabhupada just started walking towards Juhu Beach, and just looked at me, and he said, that's the beginning of his fall down. And he just kept walking. So it's just that one thing. Prabhupada said, that's the beginning. Imagine that one thing, that was the beginning, he said, of his fall down. So that's Krishna consciousness. We've got to be very careful all the time. So I don't remember what happened to that boy or any at the time, but I definitely noted Prabhupada's words when he said it. And I guess, you know, during those years, as his servant, I was in and out of Prabhupada's room dozens of times. Every time you offered obeisances. During lunch, I would be in and out 5, 6, 7, 8 times bringing a chapati. Every time you went in, you put the chapati down, you offered obeisances, you run out of the room. So just during 20 minutes of lunch, I could offer obeisances a dozen times just in that 20 minutes going in and out of his room, bringing chapatis, bringing this, bringing that. And then you would go on. But you never consider not doing it. You know? And Prabhupada never said, oh, that's all right, you've done it enough today. You know, you could start again tomorrow. He never said anything like that. You know, the only time he said was in the middle of the night, sometimes we would be in a temple or Prabhupada's quarters, where to get to his bathroom, he would go through the servants' quarters, like Krishna Balaram temple when he was there. In 75, his quarters were still being worked on. So to get to his bathroom, he went through the servants' quarters, and I would be sleeping on the floor. So he might go through 2-3 times between 1 in the morning and 4 in the morning, and I would, be sleeping on the floor. And each time, Prabhupada put his slippers on and it just, Prabhupada would walk, shuffle through, and I'd hear him. So as soon as I hear him, I would just roll over and then just, I'd be lying down on my back. So I'd just roll over, do a 180, and I go, Namo Vishnu. And he'd go, no. He'd say, take rest. It's okay. Take rest. So then I'd go back, and then a couple minutes later, he'd be coming back out of the bathroom, and he'd walk by, and I'd roll over again. I go, Namo Vishnu. He'd say, take rest. It's okay. So that was the only time he ever, when I was sleeping, he'd say it wasn't necessary. But it was easy. I was already on the floor, so... You can never get enough, mercy from your spiritual master. You got to take everything you can. I, still try to. I'm so dependent on Prabhupada's compassion and mercy. And, devotees, they would, they meditated on just being able to once touch Prabhupada's feet, which you never touch Prabhupada. Every day offer obeisances, dandavats, and devotees would just look at his lotus feet, the bottoms of his feet are pink, and everybody just wanted to, take his dust, but you didn't, because that's how we were trained. But I was every day massaging him twice a day, grabbing his feet and rubbing his feet with oil and my hands and pulling his toes. I was doing that every day. But even at nighttime, I would massage him in bed, so his feet were at the edge of the bed. So I would sit on the floor, and I'd massage his feet. And if I saw him close his eyes, I'd put my head on his feet, because I thought, you just can't get enough of Prabhupada's mercy. So even I'm every day holding his feet, there was still like, I wanted more. And that's, when you were with Prabhupada, that's how you felt. You just wanted as much. You wanted more, and there was never enough. There was never enough mercy you could get from Srila Prabhupada. So I would occasionally do that to get some more Vishvambar Prabhu.
I was
not present. He was in his room. He wasn't present. Neither was I present. I would be upstairs in my room. Well, he's also there. On Prabhupada's always on the altar in every temple. So you can meditate on that. It's kind of like the question when once Kirtanananda Swami asked Prabhupada in a letter. He said, when offering artik to the deities, to the different, the different parts of the deity's body, he said, what should we meditate on? And Prabhupada said, don't meditate. He said, he's a person. You're offering it just like you're offering to his feet. You don't have to think, you're offering it to the feet. He said, you just offer it to each part. There's nothing separate you have to do, because it's not a ritual, It's a fact. It's what we're doing. It's our service. So No, it was always been like that. It was never any question that you were facing the Vyasa-san. We've always been offering the prayers from the beginning. It's the way we were, again, how we were brought up in ISKCON at that time. So that was, you know, always was the standard to do like that. I get confused sometimes, even, you know, Guru Puja, when it ends and then all of a sudden they start chanting Jai Shri Krishna and everybody just goes up to the front. And the same thing, a Mekala, she would just stand there right next to the Vyasa-san, you know, because she thought this is Guru Puja Kirtan, you know. So either way is nice. You can't separate Prabhupada from Krishna either, you know. And what do we know? Prabhupada said if you're serving Krishna, you're serving through Prabhupada. You can't forget Prabhupada. You know, it's not possible to know anything about Krishna without Prabhupada. The same thing is at least to have that etiquette, you know, minimum amount of etiquette. Prabhupada always, we always had that. And it's not that there are more people in the temple now than when Prabhupada was present. If he was in a temple, people were hanging through the windows, you know, because the room was so crowded, but still was that space between the Vyasa-san to the deities. So it's something we can do. It doesn't require any effort to do it. And if we do it, of course, then again, it's good for us, for our consciousness. It shows being conscious of the spiritual master. Mm. There's so many things are there now, 40 years later, little difference here and there goes on in kirtan, so many things, you know, we could discuss, but main thing is to keep the consciousness very, very focused. Someone here? Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Yes, Mataji. Hari Bol.
And I was wondering how can we not be selective in what we follow and what we don't follow? Because sometimes there's a tendency to follow our God when things are convenient.
Yeah. Yes. Well, what's your question? Yeah, that's what we do. We follow pick and choose kind of a thing, yeah. You know, Prabhupada's emphasis was always just like it was in New Dwarka. Again, this was 1973. So, you know, this is what happened when the devotees started going to India. And Prabhupada established this kind in a very specific way. And then, of course, when the devotees went to India and they were in Mayapur, and then there was the Gaudiya Mat, how they did things. And so different things kind of filtered through in the ISKCON. And, of course, Chaturmas, such a, you know, big deal. And, you know, Prabhupada just gave us, all he gave us for Chaturmas was, you know, you had no milk, no, what was it, no sock, no dal, no, yeah. So we did that. But once the devotees started going to India, of course, they learned about a whole wealth of, you know, different austerities you could perform, you know, that were exciting, you know, growing, not shaving, you know, for us, that was very exciting, not shaving your face for a month at a time. And, you know, letters were coming in, and Prabhupada just shook his head, and he said, my disciples, he said, they can't even chant 16 rounds, you know, and follow the regulative principles. He said, but they want to follow so many rules and regulations. He said, just chant 16 rounds and follow the regulative principles. He said, you know, is important. So he established things how he wanted us to do it. And then he went to Mayapur the next year. It was during Chaturmas, and he was greeted by his sannyasis who both had beards. And Prabhupada just looked, and he said, just hippies. He said, shave. So he didn't, you know, he didn't care what it said in this shastra or that shastra. He wanted us in a certain way, and he always preached about us being clean cut and neat. You know, these are principles that were important to Prabhupada. Not that you stop shaving, you know, because it's Chaturmas. He said it's just an excuse to become hippies again. You know, that's what he saw. He saw that we had this mentality, and of course we did. You know. I mean, he knew he knew what we were doing, you know. So, yeah, so many things can enter in there. But Prabhupada's emphasis was always preaching. Chant, principles, and preaching. Somehow or other, whatever your service is, you preach. That's what Prabhupada wanted, you know. And even Jaipataka Maharaj, he tells a story when Prabhupada was there in Mayapur during that same time in Chaturmas. And he told Prabhupada he was chanting 64 rounds. And Prabhupada said, well, why don't you chant 16 rounds and preach? So he said, yes, Prabhupada. So that was his emphasis, you know, not that we just go off and chant Hare Krishna somewhere, but preaching. Now that was Prabhupada's mission, and this is Prabhupada's society, it's Prabhupada's mood. It's always one of preaching mood. So that's the emphasis, you know, for us. That's our big rules and regulations. Somehow or other, you have to be, you know, spread Krishna consciousness, and then you get Krishna consciousness. Do we stop here with them? I guess it's that time, huh? So, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.